We're going to talk a while today about Let My People Go, which is the overall series that we began last week. We started looking at this series of lessons last week as, you know, God is leading the children of Israel out of Egypt, and His plan was to deliver Israel. We saw that God contacts Moses through this burning bush to let him know that he was going to come and he was going to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt. His plan is to use Moses. Now, if you notice, the title of the sermon today is God's Plan B. Well, what I want you to understand is it's not really God's Plan B. The reason that it is God's Plan B, I probably should have said God's B plan, because all of the points have the letter B in it. I was told a couple of weeks ago by Alana, she's like, you know, if you would have changed this one word to this, all of your letters would have been S. So I was self-conscious about it, I guess, and so I was looking for it this time. And it kind of just fit into the plan, but this is really God's plan A and Moses' plan B. Moses doesn't necessarily right now want to go into Egypt and bring the children of Israel out. So here's the setting. The setting is Moses is now settled in Midian, right? And we look at the children of Israel in the land of Egypt, and they are in misery. It is because they are in misery that God has heard their cry, and He's coming to get them. Moses is now 80 years old, and that's when God comes calling to Moses. I want us to examine today when God called Moses. And I'm not just talking about, you know, maybe what year. If you can look at, you know, some of the history and some, you know, different commentaries will tell you that, you know, try to pinpoint what year that this was where God called Moses and what year they, you know, the children of Israel came out of the land. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm going to look at when God called Moses. What was going on in Moses' life at the time that God is asking him to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt? The first thing that I want us to look at as far as when God called Moses was God called Moses at a time when Moses was very busy. Doesn't it seem like sometimes God will call us when other things are going on in our lives? And I believe that there's a reason for that. That He says, Tony, I know you've got a lot going on in your life right now, but where's your priority? Is it me or is it this thing that you've got going on in your life? What's your priority today, Tony? And so God calls at inopportune times sometimes. Again, we might be able to confirm with Jamie because he's gone through this too, but there are times when somebody calls at 2 o'clock in the morning and says, you know what? I can't sleep. I need to be baptized tonight. You know what? I'm kind of tired. Had a long day today. A little sleepy. Meet you there in the morning. No. I can't do that. If somebody has decided in that moment that they need to be a child of God right now, who am I to stand in God's way to say, I don't really want to open up the building. I don't really want to meet you there. I don't really want to do that. And maybe it's not even a baptism. Maybe it's just somebody that has something going on in their life. And they call and they say, Tony, I'd really need somebody to talk to right now. I can't say, you know what, I'm really busy. Let me finish this first. God often will call us when we've got other things going on because we've always got something else going on. In verse 1, as we pick up here, it tells us that Moses is tending a flock. Understand that tending sheep is a very busy job. They are very vulnerable animals. It's almost like watching your children. A lot of times you can't get multiple things done when you're watching children because it seems like danger children just are magnets for. And so you have to watch them all the time. You have to find out what's going on with them, and it's a very busy job. Even though you may not feel like you're doing a lot, you have to watch them all the time because they're very vulnerable. And think about this. Moses has started his life over. He's been doing this for 40 years now, right? He left Egypt when he was 40, and he's lived this life for 40 years. Now, we know in hindsight that Moses dies when he's 120, and so two-thirds of his life are over. Think about two-thirds of your life. If we live, as God's Word suggests, by reason of health, 80 years, somewhere between 26 and 27 years, we will live a third of our life. And so if you go to two-thirds, we're somewhere between 52 and 54 years old when two-thirds of our life are over. Now, if you're around that mark and two-thirds of your life are over, you're 52 to 54 years old, are you kind of set in your ways? You kind of have your life a little bit figured out, and you kind of know what's going on and what you're going to be doing, you know, tomorrow or on a daily basis. Maybe you're looking toward retirement, right? You're trying to plan the next couple of years of your life so that you can retire. That's where Moses is. Two-thirds of his life are over. He's probably thinking about that. I'm 42 and I'm starting to think more and more about that every day. My life is getting there. We're heading toward the other side. If by reason of health I live 80 years, then half of my life is over. And so we find Moses in this situation where he's probably pretty busy. He's already started his life over. He doesn't want to do it again. But I want to ask this question as well. How often do we fill our schedules to the point where God doesn't have any room in it? Tony, I really would like for you to do something, but you've filled your time with so much stuff. And you may think that that stuff's important, and it may very well be important. But where's the time for me? In Romans chapter 5, starting in verse 6, it says, "For while we were still helpless, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for the good man, someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrates His love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." I've always asked this question. Imagine if God treated you the way that you treat Him. Let's all do that little shiver shake. That wouldn't be good, would it? If God treated me, if God treated Tony the way that Tony treats God, imagine how that would turn out. When I get to heaven and say, "God, which mansion is mine?" Oh, sorry, I didn't quite get to that. You know what? I was really renovating my own mansion, and I didn't have time to get yours done before you got here. Because that's sometimes what Tony does to God. "Listen, God, I know I made a commitment to becoming a child of yours, and I know that I said, you know, whatever you need, I'm there for you. But boy, did I get really busy. I had a lot of stuff to do of my own. I'll get there. I'll get there eventually. I'll get it eventually." Imagine if God treated us the way that we treat Him. Imagine if God and His Son treated us the way that we treat Him. You think Jesus would say, "You know what, I'm really busy right now. I don't have time to die for you right now. I'm really busy teaching and I'm having a lot of an effect on this world. I can't die for you right now. I'm really busy. I've got a lot of things going on. Maybe I'll get to it later." And oftentimes I believe that's the way we treat God. Jesus was not too busy for us. It says at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. He didn't push it off. He said, "Tony needs me right now. And so I'm going to die for him today." God will call us at times when we think we are busy. Look at 1 Kings chapter 19, when Elijah goes and calls on Elisha. Really, it's God calling on him. But in verse 19, "So he departed from there and found Elisha." He's speaking of Elijah at this point. "He departed from there and found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, while he was plowing with 12 pairs of oxen before him, and he with the 12. And Elijah passed over him and threw his mantle on him. He left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, 'Please let me kiss my father and mother, then I will follow.' And he said to him, 'Go back again, for what have I done to you?' So he returned from following him and took the pair of oxen and sacrificed them and boiled their flesh with the implements of the oxen and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he arose and followed Elijah. and ministered to him. Do you think that Elisha is busy right now? Notice the order here. That there are 12 pair of oxen and Elisha is with the 12th pair. Now we may look at that and say, well, he was last in line. So he must not have been very important. But in that culture, it's just the opposite. You put the person who is in charge in the back so that they can see everything that everyone else is doing and make corrections as they go. It appears that Elisha is pretty successful. Whether this is, you know, his farm or his family's farm or what, or somebody has hired him to do it, he is a very important person when we talk about being the 12th in line of 12. He's the most important one. And notice what he does. He goes back and he takes the implements, right? He takes the plow and he cuts it all up and not sacrifice necessarily, but cooks the oxen that he's working with and has other people eat it. Do you think he's planning on going back to work? No. Everything that he was working with is now gone. He had no intention of going back. Yes, God, I'm really busy right now. But you know what? If you're calling me to go, then I'm going to follow this man. And I'm going to become a servant to him. So I've got 11 other servants in front of me right now. But I'm going to drop that. And I'm going to become a servant for your prophet Elijah. Is it any wonder why he was allowed to have a double spirit of Elijah when Elijah left? This man gave up a lot. He was really busy at this point in time in his life. Look at Matthew chapter 4 as Jesus is calling his disciples. Now as Jesus was walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. They're working currently. And he said to them, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. And immediately they left their nets and followed him. It doesn't matter that we're busy right now. If you want us to follow you, then we'll follow you. I want us to understand that yes, there are a lot of times where we are busy, but who do you think is keeping us busy? I believe that oftentimes Satan is the one keeping us busy with things so that we can't do the things that God really wants us to do. Moses is busy, and he doesn't want a bit more than anything to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt right now. He's busy. God's going to make him an offer that he cannot refuse. And he will eventually accept. What about us? That's how we need to look at this. Not just, oh, I can't believe Moses made all the excuses. No, am I making those excuses? Am I Moses in this scenario where I've just gotten too busy to do what God needs me to do? God also called Moses at a time when things were looking pretty bleak for the children of Israel. Things are very bad for Israel right now. And in our context in Exodus chapter 3, verse 7 says, the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. I know what they're going through. The children of Israel probably thought there was no end in sight. How is this large group of slaves ever going to overcome the taskmasters in Egypt? How are they ever going to do that? How are they ever going to free themselves from slavery? Well, they're not going to be able to. And if you look at where Moses is right now, 40 years ago, it would have been a little better for Moses, right? He was implanted in Egypt. He was within their culture. He was the grandson of Pharaoh, adopted, yes, but the grandson of Pharaoh. He's got some political power here. He knows that he can have this opportunity to lead his people out. He was a leader at this point in time in his life, but now he's just a shepherd. How is it that he, as a shepherd, is going to go in and lead Israel out of Egypt. Again, let's look at ourselves. Do we look at our lives and say, it's a pretty bleak situation? A lot of things going on. In Matthew chapter 19, after Jesus has talked to this rich ruler and told him to sell all that he has and follow after him, and then he gives this dissertation to his apostles and disciples, the close disciples, about how difficult it is for the rich to get into heaven. The disciples ask a question. Then who can be saved? Who can go to heaven if it's that difficult? And notice the response that Jesus gives them in verse 26. And looking at them, Jesus said to them, with people it is impossible. Not just difficult, it is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. I believe at times when we doubt ourselves, we're really doubting God. When we're saying, I can't do something, because that's just not me, that's not who I am, we're not just doubting ourselves. We're saying, God, I don't believe that you can work through me in this circumstance to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. And yes, we may be trying to put that on ourselves and say, no, it's not you, it's me. Right? If we had a quarter for every time a pretty girl told us that in high school, oh, Tony, it's not you, it's me. At some point you go, maybe it's me. Right? How often do we have to tell God, oh, it's not you, I know you could do it, I can. And what God is trying to tell us is, no, if you let me, yes, I can. I can make you into something that you never thought you could be. Something greater, something better, just let me in. And we're really not doubting ourselves so much as we're doubting that God can work through us in that way. Oh, you don't know my past. You don't know my history. Yes, He does. And yet He is still looking at you and saying, I can use you if you simply let me. In 1 Kings chapter 17. 1 Kings chapter 17 and starting in verse 10. As Elijah is in a bleak situation himself, he comes across this woman who's maybe even in a more bleak situation. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, please get me a little jar of water in a jar that I may drink. And as she was going to get it, he called to her and said, please bring me a piece of bread in your hand. Now, notice how bleak her situation really is. But she said, as the Lord your God lives, I have no bread, only a handful of flour in a bowl and a little oil in a jar. And behold, I am gathering a few sticks that I may go and prepare for me and my son that we may eat and die. Then Elijah said to her, do not fear, go, do as you have said. But make me a little bread cake first and bring it to me. And afterward, you may make one for yourself and for your son. For thus says the Lord God of Israel, the bowl of flour shall not be exhausted, nor shall the jar of oil be empty until the day the Lord sends rain on the face of the earth. This is a bleak situation right here. She is going to fix her last meal for herself and her son. And here this prophet of God says, make mine first. Trust God enough to make mine first. Bring it to me and then you'll have plenty for you and your son. How many of us would have turned around and said, here's your water, but I think I'll pass on the other stuff. Here's a little bit, God. You asked for two things. I'm going to give you one of those two. Here's a little bit, but I'm not sure about the rest of this. Imagine your boss coming to you at 4:00 in the afternoon and say, if we don't close this deal today, all of us are going to lose our jobs. The whole company, we're all going to lose our jobs. I need that report on my desk at 5. I know I asked somebody else to do it, but they didn't get it done, and now I need you to do it. Pretty bleak situation. Thanks a lot, right? Now everything is riding on your shoulders, and you have an hour to do something that maybe somebody else had weeks or months to do. Sometimes that's what God does. Sometimes He says, I know it's bleak, Tony, but trust me, do this. Have you ever tried to outgive God? It doesn't work. You'll never be able to do it. Malachi tells us that. This widow and her son tell us that. If things look bleak in your life, that's when you need to trust God the most. God is coming to Moses at a time in Moses' life when Moses' previous effort was botched. You notice how I'm stretching for these B words? He botched his first attempt. Moses feels like he's lost his influence. Notice the question that he asks in Exodus chapter 3 and verses 11. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Well, 40 years ago, you were somebody who could go to Pharaoh. Right? This was Moses' plan A while he was in Egypt, while he was the grandson of Pharaoh. Now he's saying, well, who am I? I've been gone for 40 years, and you know what? I didn't actually leave on good terms. So I've been gone for a long time. And when I do show up, somebody's going to go, oh yeah, Moses, I remember you. Last time you were here, you killed somebody. And so he's in this situation where he made an effort, but it didn't work out on his behalf. Notice in Acts chapter 7, interesting to me, this scenario that Stephen is in. And just as he's getting ready to be stoned, he says some pretty interesting things. In Acts chapter 7, starting in verse 20, he's recounting Israel's history. Now, Moses himself doesn't give us some pieces of this information. But notice what he says. It was at this time that Moses was born. He was lovely in the sight of God, and he was nurtured 3 months in his father's home. After he had been set outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and nurtured him as her own son. Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and deeds. Now, as we come to Moses, what does Moses tell God? I'm not very good at speaking, right? But here's a man who's powerful in his words and his deeds. But when he was approaching the age of 40, it entered into his mind to visit his brethren, the sons of Israel. And when he saw one of them being treated unjustly, he defended him and took his vengeance on for the oppressed by striking down the Egyptian. And he supposed that his brethren would understand that God was granting them deliverance through him. But they did not understand. Moses doesn't tell us that in Exodus, but Stephen is telling us that now. On the following day, he appeared to them as they were fighting together, and he tried to reconcile them in peace, saying, men, you are brethren. Why do you injure one another? But one who was injuring his neighbor, pushed him away, saying, who made you a ruler or a judge over us? Do you mean to kill us as you did the Egyptian yesterday? At this remark, Moses fled and became an alien in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. See, from this perspective, Moses tried. He thought the children of Israel would see him as their deliverer 40 years earlier. But they didn't. So he tried, he realized that he failed, and so he left. What does failure do to confidence? Typically, it drives you down. Now, some people it motivates, I will admit. There are some people when they fail, they say, I'll never fail again. And they work hard to make sure that they don't. And they come back even stronger. It's that whole fight or flight thing. Moses is a flighter. He tried. He failed. He fled. He ran away. So now his confidence is low. What's the difference? The difference is this time is not Moses' plan. Moses is not in the driver's seat. God is in the driver's seat this time. So the question for us remains, is God in the driver's seat of your life? Because if He's not in the driver's seat, then your confidence is going to get lower and lower because you're going to continue to fail. We'll always do that. But if God is in the driver's seat, if He is the head of your life, if He is leading you, then you can succeed in anything. How many times have you tried and failed? You don't know how many times I've heard people say when talking to them about needing to be a Christian, how many times they've said things like, Tony, you just don't understand. You don't know what I've done. Well, I don't. I know what I've done. God knows what you've done. He knows what I've done. He knows what Paul did. Don't put it on you. Put God up front. If you've tried and failed over and over and you say, I just can't do it. I can't go into the waters of baptism because I can't fix my life. Of course not. Because you can't fix it without God. Maybe let God try. Put Him out front. Put Him first. And let Him go ahead of you. And see how much that changes in your life. Philippians 1, starting in verse 21. For to me, to live is Christ and to die is gain. But if I am to live on in the flesh, this will mean fruitful labor for me, and I do not know which to choose. But I am hard pressed from both directions, having the desire to depart and to be with Christ, for that is very much better. Yet to remain on in the flesh is more necessary for your sake. See, Paul was at a point in his life where he said, you know what? If I'm going to live, I'm going to live for Christ. And if I die, it's going to be better for me. What an attitude to have. Can we have that attitude? God is calling Moses at a time in Moses' life when Moses is very busy. He's got other things going on. He may not want to mess with what God's got going on right now. He's going to Moses at a time in Moses' life when the situation for the children of Israel and for Moses is very bleak. There's not much of a chance for Moses, because Moses is 40 years beyond his prime, in his prime position. The children of Israel have now been enslaved for even 40 years longer, which makes it even worse. The situation is bleak, but that's when God is calling Moses. And God is calling Moses at a time in Moses' life when Moses tried the first time and failed. But see, now God is going to be in control. God says, I know all of those other things happen. I know the situation, and that's why I'm coming to you. So that the children of Israel, so that you, Moses, will see that it's me and not you and not them. God often calls unexpected people at an unexpected time. And yes, that can be us. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. It says, for consider your calling, brethren. There were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. And the base things of the world and the despised God has chosen. The things that are not, so that He may nullify the things that are, so that no man may boast before God. I've always said, if this took somebody wise, if it took somebody great, I couldn't do it. It's because of this verse right here, it gives me confidence to even stand up here. I'm not mighty. I'm not noble. I'm foolish. I'm weak. I'm base. But God says, that's who I'm looking for. If you would have asked me, I'm coming up on 25 years of my graduating class. That's a long time. Not as long as some, but it's a long time. I didn't mean to point specifically, but it's been a long time, 25 years. If you would have told me 25 years ago that I'd be standing up here today, I would have laughed in your face. Not me. I had enough trouble leading songs or saying a prayer or any of those things, let alone standing up here and giving a lesson and having people stay to listen to it. Never would have been me. That's not Pat Tony on the back. That is, look what God can do with very little if you just let Him. And I encourage you to do that as well. If you're here today and you're not a child of God, understand that you can become one today. You can begin that journey, that process of becoming a child of God, living the way that God wants you to live. Will you make mistakes? Of course you will. But God will also forgive you of those things if we ask. If you're here and you are a child of God who has fallen away, who slipped, who maybe in a situation where Moses was, where you don't think you can do any good, and you've kind of just sat back, you have time and opportunity to make that right with your God today. If you're here and subject to God's call in any way, won't you please come to the front seat while we stand and while we sing.